Today on You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. It's a film club edition, and I am joined by comedian and funny man Kermit Apio to talk about one of his favorite films, Joe versus the Volcano.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference, love. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. I am your host, Silas Lindenstein. This is a film club edition. So, you know, you've heard it before, right? Film club. It's like a book club, but for films. I find my friends. I have them give them three movies to pick from. I pick one of them, and then we discuss that. We discuss that film. We go over it like a book club, but it's a film, which is good. I love movies. You love movies. That's why you're listening to a podcast about movies. Or maybe it's because you love my guest, Kermit Apio, comedian, headlining comedian, goes all over the nation performing comedy. Sometimes he's not even on Nation. Sometimes he's on cruises. And that's international. He's an international performing comedian. And he's here on this podcast to discuss Joe versus the Volcano. Thank you so much for joining me. And Joe versus the Volcano, it's PG for 1990 romance comedy, 1 hour and 40 minutes. I get into details about it in here. So I just need you to, I just need to come on here and introduce it. Really, I got the video all ready and edited for you. So if you haven't seen the movie, you can pause, come back later, or just, hey, but just be prepared. This is spoiler filled. This is a spoiler filled episode. Okay, here we go. Film Club, Joe versus the Volcano, with my good friend and comedian, Kermit Apio.
Once upon a time, in the middle of a deep, dark factory, an average Joe,
Joe Banks,
lived a very boring life.
Good morning, Didi.
Hi, Joe. What's with the shoe?
Losing my soul.
Yeah.
Until one day, he found out his life was over.
I'm not sick except for this terminal disease.
That's right. You have some time left, Mr. Banks. Live it well.
And that's...
Joe Banks?
When his adventure began.
You and I might be able to help each other. I want to hire you to jump into a volcano. Red carpet situation. It's wine, women, and song in the sweetest little paradise you ever saw.
A real journey.
Are you Joe Banks?
Yeah.
Whoa!
Warner Brothers presents... Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan.
Joe Banks.
In the story of a man, a mountain, and a miracle.
Take me to the volcano!
He's diving! He's jumping! He's leaving!
Written and directed by John Patrick Shanley, the Academy Award-winning writer of Moonstruck.
I love you.
I love you, too. I've never been in love with anybody before, either. It's great. I am glad. But the timing stinks. I gotta go.
Joe versus the Volcano.
Kermit, welcome to the show.
Hi, Silas. Thanks for having me on.
Great. As we say, welcome to Film Club, where we talk about Film Club. And we talk about films. So... I was telling the listeners right before we started, this was exciting for me because you picked a film that I thought I had seen, Joe versus the Volcano, right? And I was like, I remember it. I was like, man, you really like that one? I don't think that was that. Wasn't that really bad? I think I had heard bad things about that. I think I've seen that. I've seen the end. I remember them. I know how it ends. And we do spoil things in here. So people should have seen the movie. So yeah. I remember the end. And then I started watching it. And I was like, I've never seen this. What is this? I have no. Who is that's Meg Ryan? I thought she looked different in it. Like, well, that's funny. And then another Meg Ryan shows up and I'm like, what? I was like, wait a second. What is this? What the hell is this film? I'd never seen it before.
Can I ask you, am I the first guest to do that to you?
Where I thought I had seen it, but I hadn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, usually I know if I've seen it or like, well, it was okay. I'm like, relook at it again. Sometimes I wasn't sure. I'm like, oh no, I haven't seen it. I've seen parts, but I'm like, no, I thought I had seen it or something. I just thought it was like maybe that bad that I didn't remember it. It was 1990. It came out. Right. So I was like, oh, so I was in the middle of high school. I could see why I wouldn't necessarily remember it super well. So real quick, the plot of this film, for those of you that haven't seen it, even though you should have before you watch this, but, so the plot of Joe versus the Volcano. Joe Banks is a downtrodden everyman from Staten Island working in wait a second. That's the whole damn thing. No, Tom Hanks, starring Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. Hanks plays a man who, after being told he is dying of a rare disease, accepts a financial offer to travel to the South Pacific, to a South Pacific island, and throw himself into a volcano on behalf of the superstitious natives. Along the way, he meets and falls in love with a woman taking him there. It's written, directed by John Patrick Shanley, which I was excited about because I knew about him in from theater. He did was it Danny in the Deep Blue Sea? I think so. He's a playwright that I knew about. It stars Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. It got mixed reviews. It wasn't like it was a minor success in the box office. I think it made something like it was a $25 million movie. Yeah. Made 39.4. So now it would be a failure. That would be an absolute failure. Yeah. Now here they like, oh no, we made our money back. It's all right. And it got a mix of reviews.
Yeah.
Ebert liked it. He described it as new and fresh. He gave it a 3.5 originally. And I guess years later he looked back and was like, why didn't I give that a 4?
Wow.
Like he changed his mind. This is one of the interesting things I find about critics, you know, like where I think we have no perception when we first watch a movie, because if we've seen it before anyone else, we don't know how other people are going to take it. And sometimes, like, I think it's good so we don't get altered. It's why I walk out last, because I don't want to hear anybody what they said before I go and say what I was going to say about it. So I thank you, because I love this film. I absolutely, like, I was honestly going to like, okay, I'm really tired. I can probably get through like half of it before I got to go to bed. I'll watch it the next day. And I stayed up because I couldn't, I was like, this is great. What was it? What about it for you? Like you said, this is one of your, okay. So is this a favorite movie or was it just a super meaningful to you in some way? What is it?
Yes. It's both of those things. And I'm glad you brought that up. And by the way, before I answer that, I want to say that when you talk about the financial, like $39 million that it made.
Yeah.
And that today would be a failure. You got to remember that at that point, people would watch Tom Hanks eat cereal, right? So it didn't even matter if the movie was good. Everybody, because it was Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
And so he was the draw for many people who wound up not liking the movie, they went to see it because he's in it. So it had a quick run, and then it didn't. I tried to see it again, like maybe 4 weeks later, and it was out of the theater.
It was out. Wow. Okay.
Maybe not 4 weeks. I can't remember, but it was. So to answer your question, it is very important to say that it spoke to me. That is a big part of the theme of this movie, and watching it again, it did bring back memories of where I was at that point. And we'll talk more about that, but yes, it definitely connected with who I was at that very moment. And also just on the other side of it, it had some aspects of how humor is done in that film that I just thought was so unique. Like there's maybe two or three out loud laughs. The rest, it's like, it's this subtle humor that's sort of tucked in there. And so from that standpoint, I enjoyed it. So yes, it's kind of both. I really love the movie as a movie on its own. Mm-hmm. And at the time in 1990, when I watched it, it was telling me a story about myself.
What was it? Were you working an office job at the time?
I was working at United Airlines, and I was doing comedy as a hobby. That movie, I saw it, I can't remember when in 1990 I saw it, but I wound up quitting my day job in May of 91. So it was kind of speaking to me, right? Because when he talks about how the lights just is sucking the life out of him, I used to feel that way. Once I started doing open mic and getting like $20 to go MC a show or whatever, whenever I would come into that place, the lights just felt like they felt wrong, you know?
I never felt
that way until comedy came along.
Yeah. I mean, that hit me right away.
Yeah.
I was in it like, oh, immediate connection, just the tightness of the office, the, you know, the feeling that it is just this mechanical line that you're going through.
Right.
You know, and clearly that was a perception thing of him.
Yes.
Cause nobody could park like that. Right. In the lot. Did you get to watch, it again since we talked?
I did. I'm so glad I did too. It was because you worry about things that you liked at a certain time, if it's going to hold up, or if there's something problematic, you know what I mean? Like a lot of the movies that. So I was glad I actually said when it ended, I said, it's still a good movie. It still works.
Oh yeah. No, I was like, I could show this to almost anybody, I think.
Yeah.
I love the, I was like the proctologist like place. I'm like, right. It's like, that's just a great symbol for where he works at.
Yes.
I don't know. One thing I loved early on was when walking into the office, and both when he got there and then when he came back from the doctor, was the flower growing in the crack.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a, especially as a homeowner, where I find life coming out of places that I've not trying to get it to go,
yes,
and it won't grow where I'm trying. Like, but there is this, I don't know, there is this something about, I was trying to think about if that was a bigger metaphor in the movie than I had initially thought. Like, is it, I don't know if it's about survival or finding a way, or it's going to work out. Cause what, the fowler got stepped on early and then it came back. Right.
Right. And it comes back after he's found out he's going to die. Right.
Yeah.
And the thing for me, the thing I love about that flower is that what's important to me is that he notices it. Not that he sort of props it back up and tries to get it to stand up again.
Yeah.
And you realize that all these people just kind of are walking to work. They don't notice, like you said, this life that's kind of happening in the middle of stone, in the middle of concrete. And then for the first time, and it sets up the whole movie, he notices it. He said, well, look at this flower down here. And he picks it up. And that's his journey now, that he's going to notice those things that he hasn't noticed for 5 years since he's been at this place.
Mm-hmm. The what was the name of that actor, his boss?
Oh,
I'm trying to remember that.
Oh, what a great actor. And then having that conversation is so perfect, right? The fact that
Abe,
that conversation
is that, that's not Abe Vigoda. Abe Vigoda is the other guy. Forget his name now. But I love that guy. The perfect boss. Perfect boss in the 90s too.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I will say when he did find out, I was like, that's not real. No, he doesn't have it, right? That's not going to be a thing. Why did Meg Ryan, why do you think she played all three roles in this?
Because she was kind of like him, kind of a rising star. And I think they couldn't get a star to play one of those characters. You know what I mean? Like, because her third character doesn't come in until halfway into the movie.
Yeah.
Like about 45 minutes in. So I think it was a way to say, like, you know, can we get a star to play this? And then luckily two of them are sisters, so it kind of works, you know?
Yeah. I was trying to figure out if there was a symbolism to it. I mean, I could see that there's a bit for the, definitely an easy bit for the first, for the sisters. But also I was like, damn good. What a nice thing for Meg Ryan to get to do, to show some acting chops, this range of herself in one film.
Yeah.
That's, you don't get to see that a lot.
Yes.
Like, unless you're Eddie Murphy.
Right. Exactly.
Then that's your thing.
Especially back then.
Was this the first movie they did together? Or was this like...
Oh, that's a good question. I
meant
it
to Google that.
Yeah, yeah. I have to look that up. But that's a very good question. I do...
Because I was like, this is the it's a Meg Ryan,
right?
Tom Hanks thing. They must have drawn in. it was not to jump ahead, but okay. One, you said it holds up. I do wonder about, like, do you think the tribes? I mean, Abe Vigoda can't play that today, right? Like, he can't. Well,
okay. I will say this, and I thought this at the time, you know, because even then I was kind of annoyed at how, you know, Hawaiians and people are portrayed. It's a very close thing. But they set it up when they said that a ship of Jewish people were swept off course as they wound up on the other side of the horn. So she kind of sets up that they are sort of a mix of Jewish and native population, and all their, like, you know, the sort of the chants and the sort of tribal music they have, it's all based in Jewish musical songs, right? Which I thought
that's funny.
So they're saying to them, they're saying to the audience, like, look, we made this thing up. It's you know, we're not trying to be any specific tribe or anything. We made it up that some Jews got lost. They found this place. They and the natives built this society. To me, it was like, it's a very funny construct,
okay,
right? And then all their chants are songs that you kind of heard, but they're done in this sort of minor chord chanting way with the heavy percussion. But they're all from, like, Jewish songs and musicals and stuff.
Okay, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Adding to love. And they're the soda outfits that they had, the jewelry. And I even noticed the one woman had, like, as her bra were like cans that were out. Okay, that was the one. Okay, so it would hold up. I think you have to talk. You might have to talk through it with some people. I could see my daughter going, what the heck? What is this?
Absolutely. We're in a generation that's way more aware of this kind of thing. And it should be a conversation, you know, but I will say, like, the way they set it up, especially when you think about this is 1990, they set it up to say, look, this is a comic premise. Everything about the movie is a silly comic premise, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of unbelievable in many ways. It's, you know, I had friends, a couple of friends, because, and this is one thing I learned at an early age with this, is that back when you're young, you think everybody's going to love what you love. You think, you got to hear this band, right?
Yeah.
And so I was like, you have to see this movie. It's really, it's funny. It's smart, and it's blah, 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 and this and that. And I had people who reacted with that kind of, you probably know this since you watch a lot of movies, but people who do that kind of thing where they're trying to say something nice and they almost, they just can't, like, oh yeah, Meg Ryan played all those parts. Like, they were really trying. And then And then I had a couple of friends who literally said, that was stupid. It was really stupid. And it was like, wait, how come I love this movie so much and people cannot stand it or are very indifferent to it, you know? And I wonder,
in college, maybe I would have. I don't know if I would have got it. Well, this is high school. I'm not sure. Maybe I wouldn't have got it.
Right. Yeah. And I was 20, I think I was 23, 22. So I was 22 years old. Yeah. And yeah, most 22 year olds aren't going to buy into this. It's not.
It's. I was like, is it goof? I was trying to decide if the end could be just, was it justified in its goofiness? And I think it does.
That's a very good question. And I think that is the crux of what I'm saying, is that to me, it did. To me, it was like, yeah, it was so goofy and silly that, it, you know, and like you said, like the tribal thing. Yes, today it has to be a conversation.
Yeah.
But rewatching it, I saw and I realized, no, they set this up. They set this up as a very insane premise.
Yes. Right?
They set it up so that when you meet them and they've got the orange soda cans and the soda can costumes and everything. Yeah. Like, they set the whole thing up to be what it is, and they're not trying to make it anything else.
I talk about how a movie, I would say the world of the play, even though it's not a play, but the movie has to have an established set of laws and for the world to work. And so it's unique to everyone, and we can't expect, the laws of Star Trek do not work in the laws of Schindler's List. Okay. There's laws, there's logic that go with it. And comedies have their own internal logic that it has to work in.
Yeah.
All Marvel movies almost exist in the same comedic universe, right?
Yes.
Nearly.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that the stretching that they did early on in this allowed for so much. I just think it's an absurdist. It's almost an absurdist. Maybe not absurdist play, but it gets absurd at times. But I think I don't think they break expectations on what could happen through
this.
That's
a good way to put it. Right? Yes. Yes. That's a really good way to put it, is that they never go beyond what they're telling you they're doing. They never stop. They don't define something and then step out of it in order to wrap up the story. It all stays within, like, their expectations they set are all kind of met.
Like the biggest anti common sense thing to happen is them getting flown back out of the volcano.
Yes.
But to that point, we get there. I'm like, I buy it. I'm fine. Right. I'm fine with this. I'm not disturbed by this. Another one I would have probably, you know what? He's willing to take the leap of faith. And even they kind of questioning, well, what do you think is going to happen? And part of me is like, what do you think? You're jumping into a volcano. What do you think could happen? Or that the island is going to sink, like, right? I mean, that's a bizarre thing anyway.
Yes. Yes. Right. And she even says, like, you know, when they're standing above the volcano, she even says, you know, what could happen? What is, you know, they're even saying, like, what could happen on this? Like, they're setting up the fact that let's just do it and whatever happens, right? Happens. Who does that in a movie that takes itself more seriously about that, right? Yeah. Who says, like, you know, let's run past these people shooting at us. Who knows what's going to happen? Like, it's, you know what I mean? It's so they actually kind of even set up the fact that something really kind of silly could happen.
All right. I always ask people, or I want to know what your three favorite things about a film are. Like, if you can airline, like, three favorite things. I'll start with to mine to give you a second. I will say my number one thing, I absolutely love the writing of this. And I almost could tell that when things are written by a playwright, because there's always lines that I just loved and I had to look up later. I was like, okay, there has to be quotes from this everywhere. And why this film isn't quoted more often, I don't know. There are just delicious lines that only playwrights would serve up in this. So the writing I thought was wonderful. I will say my number two on it is Meg Ryan. I think she was it's just a gorgeous performance of three different characters in there. The last one being probably the most herself, I did think her first character, the office worker, was just gorgeous character acting work. Like, it wasn't put on. I feel like the most exaggerated character was probably the other sister.
Right, right.
Yeah. The other one just, but she felt grounded in that. That character was clearly not her. And I had to like kind of look, I'm like looking at it like, I think that's Meg Ryan, but I don't think she looks like this in this movie. I thought maybe she had black hair, but I thought she was blonde in it. Like, is that her? Maybe that's another actor.
Right.
And the fact, I just think anytime an actor gets you to think they might be another actor that just kind of looks like her, they're doing a good job. And I'd say, and third, I mean, kind of goes in with the writing, but I think the comedy, I think it's impeccable comedy. I think it's just, it is the perfect, I don't know if it's a perfect comedy, but I think it's a damn, I think it's damn close. Cause I think it's the comedy feels very personal to me. And I don't know if it's just cause I relate to Joe so much, the average Joe, right? I think it comes from places of honesty.
Yeah.
Constantly. Yeah. Oh, I read something about it that said they never go for a laugh that isn't earned in it. Right. They don't they're not just doing a joke to do a joke. It's always within the context of the scene and, pushing that scene or plot or the characters forward. They don't just do a joke to do a joke. They do it to make sense. And I was laughing or giggling like throughout it. I don't know. Maybe I wasn't howling like I had been the other night. Maybe there wasn't that anything that outrageous, but there was never a time that I didn't think of this as comedy first.
Yeah.
Right. It's not a drama comedy though. This is a comedy. So it had me laughing. So those are my top three about a film, the film.
Okay, so mine are actually very similar to that. The first one, like I mentioned, it sort of spoke to me because I was doing this thing on the side, this comedy that was fun and inspiring, and the people I was meeting were just as weird and goofy as I am. And so the concept of the movie, which is to experience life beyond what you do, just to see it, just to see what it's like, just to see. To see things that you never saw, right? I mean, when they're out stranded at sea, the first night he sees the constellations and they all mean something. They're all flying by. The next night is the night he sees the moon.
Yeah.
Right. So it's saying like, because they could have made that one scene, but they didn't. They made it the next day. In other words, that you keep looking for new things, and with each day you'll find new things. And I just sort of love that even their sort of speech about when they're deciding to jump in together, even that's kind of like, well, let's just see what happens, right? And that's something that we, especially when I'm 22 years old, I'm working a day job, you know, a couple of years out of college, and it's so much of life at that point is okay, you know, the circle of it, pay your bills,
yeah,
you know, go to work, you know, and try and take a day off every once in a while, you know, that kind of thing, and here was this comedy thing sort of telling me like, nah, try something weird and bizarre and something you enjoy, right? Something that, you know, when I was working the graveyard shift at United, I would do open mic, hang out with some friends, and then jet to the airport to be at United Airlines by 11 o'clock, you know, to start my shift. And then I'd be working till 7 in the morning. And so this movie spoke in that way about just the message of it. Just go try something you haven't done. And so that puts me into like the second part of it. You were talking about it is the way humor is used in that. It's not a lot of laugh out loud humor. I will say I laughed out loud again, the scene where they're about to do the ceremony on the island. They're about to start the ceremony. Uh-huh. And there's the two gongs sitting there.
Uh-huh.
And the two people are on ropes and they both go and hit the gongs with their bodies and then fall. And then they cut to Abe Vigoda and he's rolling his eyes almost like, why do we do this? This is really dumb. And then the next shot is them taking the two people out on stretchers, right? So it, to me, it was like, just that's out loud funny. But it sets itself up in that way. Like, so there are lines that I still to this day remembered, even though I haven't watched it in years. Mm-hmm. One of the things I thought was wonderfully funny. So you don't even see him. You don't even see his face. All you see is an aerial shot of New York and a voiceover with him going, with the limo person, right?
Yeah.
So he's on the phone and he goes, and he does the, you know, he talks about what he wants. And he goes, "You guys rent anything else?" And the guy goes, "No." "Okay. Thank you." It's a voiceover joke, but
yeah,
the beauty of the idea of like everything most of us do is calculated on what we can afford, what we're able to make happen. Right.
Yeah.
But can you imagine calling an elite, like the nicest limos or nicest, you know, passenger cars and say to them, "How else can I spend money with you guys?"
Yeah.
Like that. It's such a funny, like he's so new to this. Right. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the luggage guy. And by the way, that actor who played the luggage salesman, it was absolutely brilliant.
Uh-huh.
When he's talking about how important luggage is, and the line that has always killed me, and I've said it to people since, when he's giving his whole spiel about this luggage, it's the best luggage you're ever going to have, right? And Tom Hanks goes, and Joe says, "I'll take four," right? And the salesman goes, "May you live to be 1,000, sir." I remember being in the theater cracking up at that line because it was pure joy. This guy just made the sale of his life, right? Not only did he sell the best, most expensive thing they have, he sold four of them. And instead of just saying thank you or that's amazing, he says that, which is the perfect, like, it's the way to say you just made my month, you know?
Yes.
And so it's lines like that that I just love, where the humor is in all these different places, right? And even the boss talking to Harry, I know he can get the job, but can he do the job? There's a funny thing in the repetition of how that actor is doing that phone call.
Yeah.
It's very funny. It's really like, wow, this is brilliant. But it's not like laugh out loud. There's no punchline to giggle at.
Right.
But it's so funny and so humorous. So anyway, that's just the way the humor. And then along the lines of what you said, and I never thought of it from a playwright standpoint, but some of the lines are just so so brilliant, right? When Meg Ryan is explaining why she was mean to him at the dock, and she said, "I feel ashamed because I found out I have a price."
And that
to me is such a great line, right? That she's trying to avoid taking her dad's money, live her own life. And the dad says, "You can have that boat you really want if you do this one thing."
Yeah.
And she knows that, okay, I'm not free of my dad. I'm there. I have a price, and she's ashamed of it, you know? And then when they talk about, do you believe in God? That's a great conversation. It's so well written. And when he says, when it gets back to Joe, and Joe says, "You know what I realize? I have no interest in myself." And I was just like, wow, what a line. I mean, that that was, to me, as far as starting in comedy, I didn't do, like, you know me now, almost all of what I do is about my life. But when I first did, I didn't do that. It's about maybe less than half, because like that line, when I saw that movie, I was like, yeah, that's how I feel. Like, I didn't have any interest in myself. So why would a total stranger who paid, you know, $5 to get into the show, why would they want to hear what I'm not interested in? And so
it
was a really interesting sort of lesson to me. And when he says that, it was because I sort of felt the same way. And it took me years to figure that out. I mean, it really wasn't until probably 10 to 12 years where I really realized, like, that I only worked really hard on the stuff I wrote about my life. And I started to see people laughing and nodding because, oh, that happened to me and my wife, that thing you said. And it took me years to kind of figure that out. And so that movie was one of those things where I related to that line so much that here they're having this spiritual conversation. And he's like, "I don't need religion because I don't really care what happens to me. You know, I don't really care, you know?" So it's stuff like that. It's like you said, those little lines that make so much.
I pulled up a Joe quotes, the quotes from it, and I don't remember exactly when he said, I feel like I remember him saying this, but I don't remember where. But there's the my favorite line, I think, of all these is, most of us are too scared to live our lives the way we want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I forget where he says that, but
I think it's in that same speech when they were talking right before he goes to bed and she's, you know, and they started having this sort of,
okay. So before they, yeah, I think they was, probably think put a bunch same. Of these, bunch of these quotes are probably from the same place.
Yeah.
And, I love that because I feel like that's something I still struggle with today. Is I recognize that fear holds me back all the time from everything. And whether it's fear of failure or fear that doing that will stop something else. Like, I can't even decide on the introductions for the start of these reviews. Like, thinking like, should I just have a 5-second one? I mean, I kind of like what I'm doing, but like, oh, what, like I get caught up and like I spend 20 minutes talking about if I should change it. Cause yeah. What if it's better for, instead of just doing the way I want to do it,
right.
I think about, right. Well, what do most people want? I got to follow that. Right. Cause I think I've been told that a lot. Yes. I've been told a lot. Oh, well, you can't do a long show because people only want a short 15-minute show. You can't do a long one. And then, you know, ignoring the fact that the longest the most popular podcasts on the internet are Joe Rogan and WTF, which are both long ass podcasts.
Yep.
Ultimate. Yep. And because they do what they want and they'll find the audience, right? They'll find the audience if you just do what you want and people just general, you know, we probably both have all these neighbors that are living lives that they're half there, right? Or they're half, they're like, they do it because they feel they got to, and they are scared. And there's something about him getting the brain cloud.
right.
Again, why he didn't just say brain tumor, right? Because that would have been an easy, like, yeah, I got 6 months. Is that the, like, oh, well, I have nothing to lose now. What do I want to do?
Right.
With my life. There's nothing to hold me back. I can stop being afraid and really examine what you want to do. Like, that's, I think the ultimate, I think what speaks to me about this and why I think it should relate to everybody is there's as fearful as that is, that's almost a relief of, oh, I don't have to worry about pretense anymore because what do I really want? My life is on the line. And, you know, it takes some people, I mean, in real life, I think it does take people sometimes heart attacks or divorces or whatever, some big event to go, oh, well, what should I really do? Because time is limited or whatnot. And he was so afraid of doing anything else. And then once given the offer, how about you jump in a volcano? Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. Just to do this was amazing. It's amazing. I think it's just, the film touches on so many things and I'm just like,
yeah. And so I know I've harped on this, but you know, for me, I'm not saying this movie is the reason I quit my day job, but it was part of that conversation in my brain, right? That I was 22 and like, what do I really have to lose by, yeah, I'm going to lose my health insurance and my whatever, but I'm 22. Right. And so,
yeah.
And so, you know, when I was in May of, I can't remember, I was 23, I think May of 91 or whatever, it just sort of all came together and I decided to take the leap because I thought, well, at 23, you have time to fail, right? I got a couple years to, this will be my backpacking around Europe, right?
Yeah.
Where I just do this for a couple of years and then grow up at 25. And I thought of it that way. I mean, look, deep inside, I wanted this to become a career. I wanted it to be a job. But I didn't know that. I didn't know I was going to. Mm-hmm. But to really think about, well, what am I fearing here? Am I fearing that I might I might lose something from this job that, you know, yeah, it was income every week, but man, I was so much happier when I was doing those open mics. And I mean, that, you know, we're talking about going out for 5 minutes to usually eat it. And I was so much happier than 8 hours.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. If anything tells you how bad some jobs are, right? And even how bad a good job is, right?
Yeah.
Like, how bad is a good job? Oh, I would rather go be miserable for 5 minutes doing something I like, kind of. Being the worst at what I want to do is better than the best at what I'm doing now. Is far better. Yeah. Oh my God.
And also, I do want to mention, to change the topic, you mentioned Abe Vigoda. Now, I have this sort of odd fanship of Abe Vigoda. My wife actually, one birthday, got me a signed picture of Abe Vigoda, and I love it. I love it. So, because Abe Vigoda is a guy who, first of all, not an attractive man. And I don't mean that disparagingly. The fact is, but you look at TV now.
Oh, and, yeah.
And movies, and nobody looks like when you watch these CSIs or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, these hot models are cutting up bodies. Like, yeah. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, and so Abe Vigoda has always looked like the part he played when he was a cop. You're like, yeah, that dude's a cop. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I always thought, even back then, I thought, man, Abe Vigoda's career would not exist today because they want cops who look like models. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And the other thing about him was that he's very deadpan. He wasn't over the top.
Right.
He wasn't, he didn't scream punchlines. I mean, he was low delivery, deadpan, would just hold on a line, just hold that pause. Right. So to me, he was everything opposite of what you're supposed to be. And yet he had this career that spanned pretty much his life. Like he was a couple of years before he died, he was still doing bits for Conan. He was doing stuff on Conan O'Brien's show late into his life. And I just thought that's the most amazing thing. So when he shows up in the movie, and when I first watched it, I didn't know he was in it. When he shows up as the chief of the Waponi Woo, I got warm, man. I was like, it's Abe Vigoda as a native from an island. Like, it's perfect, right?
He's always, whenever I've watched a movie and he shows up as a bit player, a bit part on it, you know it was a good role. And he always does it well. He does it well, regardless of the movie's trash. He was well.
Yeah.
He's one of the like Gene Hackman.
Yes.
Gene Hackman has been in some terrible films, but he's always good. Yes. He's always good. Terrible film, but he's good.
Well, and that's the other thing about Abe Vigoda. Like, Abe Vigoda, known for comedy, right? He had his own sitcom for a while and like I said, had that deadpan delivery, but he was also in The Godfather. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He could do drama, and he was really good in those too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, the best part about, I mean, him being a character, I mean, against character actors in general, right, is that they can go to all these different things, and it usually doesn't hamper them, right? That they can move. I think the only person the one actor that didn't work for me was Jason Alexander when he was in Pretty Woman.
Yeah.
And it was a dude. I was like, no.
Yeah.
No. I don't accept this. you're a nice guy. You're supposed to be kind of not like wrong. You do things wrong, but not like this. But generally, yeah, character actors. I mean, the best part about it is being able to float between those. And in college, I remember thinking, like, being sad that I was like talked about as a character actor, because I was like, I'll never never be the lead in something. Right.
Right.
And then they point out, yeah, but you're always going to work.
And, you know, it's funny. I saw an interview with what's his name? Steven Tobolowsky, I think his name is. His most famous part was Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But he was doing plays in, I think, right after college, and he was showering and saw a bunch of hair going towards the drain, and he cried and cried and cried because he was losing his hair.
Yeah.
And he says that in hindsight, it's one of the best things ever to happen to him, because even with hair, he wasn't going to take parts in Brad Pitt. You know what I mean?
Right. But, yeah, it's true.
But the fact that he was bald so early He wound up getting comedic parts. And when you think about his scenes in Groundhog Day, just perfect, right? Yeah. Just he nails it. And and then you start thinking about all the movies he's been in, and he is so good at every single one of them, right? He's so funny, has his own way. And that was kind of my thing, has always been with Abe Vigoda, that he's sort of an underdog, right? He's not just a character actor. I mean, he was a leading man. He had his own sitcom, and I think it went two seasons. I think it's not like it got canceled quickly. It ran. It was called Fish.
Yeah, it was a spinoff of Barney Miller, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And he was on Barney Miller, which which is one of the cops that actually look like cops. Like, you know what I mean? It was so he's a guy who I always cheer for, because he just has achieved on every level, and done it with his looks and with his deadpan is impressive.
I should put him as one of my top things on here. whenever he appears in something, he should be, well, no, I mean, he's passed on, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I look at a lot of older movies here, man. who would you recommend this film to?
Well, I learned in my 20s, no one.
Because,
although I was watching it for this, for the podcast, and I thought, you know, my kids are, my son just graduated high school. I was like, I think they would enjoy it. I think because they also know my sensibilities of stuff and how my sense of humor and things that I, you know, things that I do and say. And I think they would get it from my standpoint. I don't know, man. As a matter of fact, when I gave you the movies to choose from, my favorite movies, I was very surprised you chose this one, because I
was too. I was looking at, I forget the list. I was like, maybe that. But I was just it ended up being like, he's a comedian. Why Joe? Like, I feel like this is going to tell a lot about him. And I don't remember the film that well, and it's more interesting when I don't. So, I want to talk about this. Let me see. I think I'm going to be talking about this movie a whole bunch. Yeah. It's got a strong love it from me.
Oh, that warms my heart, man.
Yeah.
I mean, because look, even if you had not liked the movie, that would have been a great conversation too, right? Because we could kind of debate aspects of it.
Why?
Right. Which by the way, I have had that debate in real life. But I will say that the fact that you liked it just warms my heart, because to me, I just felt like I was really alone on it back in the day. I've met maybe two or three people that have liked that movie, to the point where I don't really talk about it that much.
and by the way, I did look it up. This was Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks's first film together. So this started it off. This started off that I don't know what. I think they did four together. I think
four or five. That's right. Yeah, yeah, I would imagine it's four. Yeah.
Kermit Apio, may you live 1,000 years. You know, this has been a great it's been a great episode. It was a great movie that you brought to me, brought Thanks. To my life. You gave joy to my life, something they'll quote, and I'm going to hold off on showing this to my kids until they're your kids' age. Cause I was like, yeah, cause I do think sometimes it's, you know, the they're not ready for it.
Yeah.
They're not going to be ready for this for a while, but when they are, like, this is a gift for them. Like, here, watch, enjoy this. Joe versus the volcano. Thanks so much for coming on here. Are you on Instagram? Do you do the Insta?
I am. My son made an account for me, so I am. And
is he a fan page?
And this summer my daughter is going to show me how to use it.
Okay.
It was funny because my daughter said, it's so annoying. You don't touch Instagram, but you have like 300 something followers.
just your existence, Scott.
Yeah.
Oh, so, he might be coming here. We better sign up to get the first Insta.
I do. And I should be active this summer at some point once I learn how to do it.
Okay. We'll get you tagged on there. Once you're posting stuff, I'll make sure that we hook you up. Here.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, man. I was so great to watch that movie again. I think I watched it probably about maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And so I hadn't watched it since. And It was great to revisit it, and I always enjoy talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you all for listening, and thank you for watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference. Love them. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas.